meeting of the order. First of all, I'd like to announce that I'm blessed today that our city manager came with me. He promised me many years ago, that he would come with me each time, but it seemed like it always fell through the cracks. So this time, it happened to work out. So Dave has been a real good man for our city and has helped me a bunch of different things. Also, I'd like to welcome Jan.
Thank you.
Hawkins, I have had the privilege of...
One of my good girlfriends is Jan Hawkins.
I've always had the pleasure of riding in the van with her to Seabag.
Seabag Party Bus.
Yeah. So it's been a pleasure. She's taken Dick Kelly's place in the front seat, so it's been a it's been a pleasure. And I'd like to welcome Elaine Holmes, I said it right. New to this, and Mary's been here, I think, once before.
But,
welcome aboard. I think that's why maybe our city manager wanted to come. We got all these ladies coming on.
This is a matter of reflection.
Here we go again.
Oh, wow.
We now have 5 lady mayors again, the first time since 2008. Thank you very much.
5 women mayors. And Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce our new city manager, Andy Hall. Cathedral City is blessed to have Andy join us. He's worked for the city for a little over 3 years, and he's replaced Don Bradley, who we will miss, but Andy will do a great job.
Welcome.
Thank you. Nice to
meet you. At this time, I'd like to have a roll call, please.
Blake?
Here.
Cathedral City?
Present.
Coachella?
Here.
Desert Hudson?
Here.
Indian Well?
Here.
Inhill?
Here.
Inquinta?
Here.
Palm Desert?
Here.
Palm Springs? Rancho Mirage?
Here.
Riverside County 4th District?
Here.
Riverside County 5th District?
Here.
Caliente? We have more.
Thank you. At this time, would Dave lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
This Dave?
Yes, this Dave.
My pleasure. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. At this time, it's open for public comment. Anybody wants to address the executive session? Thomas?
Yes.
Please.
Hi, good afternoon. Mr. Chair and Committee, as you may or may not know, my name is Tomas Oliva, and I'm the Regional Affairs Officer for the Southern California Association of Governments. My area to cover is the Coachella Valley as well as the Imperial County. I don't make it a habit to often take up your time for this committee, but I did want to, at the start of this year, just kind of go ahead and go through some announcements that I think merit bringing to your attention. First one being, SCAG is once again offering a student scholarship for any student both in junior, senior year in the high school or at a community college. They would be placed at a city government level internship during the summer. I'm putting that to your attention, and I'm in the process of emailing the application to school counselors. And I would like to do that as well for local city managers in case you have a bulletin within your cities that you can place within your cities. The next one is Caltrans Planning Grants. The reason why I bring that up is SCAG is hosting a planning grant workshop this Thursday from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. If any of your cities are interested in applying, I would highly recommend participating in that workshop. I believe it will be in the MSW, and if not, I'll go ahead and work with staff to reserve that. 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. this Thursday. It's the 31st. Lastly, if I may, I would just like to announce that the SCAG's General Assembly will be May 2nd and 3rd at the JW Marriott here in Palm Desert. And I would very much like to see you on there. That's it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Any other public comment? No other public comment. Any executive committee comments or directors?
I've got one director comment. And I know it's certainly news in the city of Indio. I know folks there are well aware of a couple of major transportation projects related to economic development in our region, and that's Monroe Street and Madison Street, and certainly in conjunction with the city of La Quinta with respect to Madison Street. These are major projects for the region, a part of the regional transportation program, with some pretty significant CVAC dollars attached. And I gather that the city of Indio has done a great job of procuring those services, and will likely have both of those well done before a few important festivals coming up. Isn't that right?
That's correct.
It's under construction right now?
Yes, it is.
Go ahead, John.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to quickly point out, and Alan's going to pass out a copy of this, Crisis Communication and Disaster Preparedness Workshop. This is a program that was offered to us by CalEMA, and Michelle DeArmond from my staff and a few others went to it in San Bernardino, along with a lot of San Bernardino County and Riverside County, Riverside folks, and I missed it. As a matter of fact, I was at AQMD and I was planning on being there and I got caught up on a freeway thing, but Michelle thought it was so important that she arranged for a private review of the material with me. And I said, wait a minute, if we're good, if it's that good, can we get them to come out to Coachella Valley and put it off for anybody in Coachella Valley would like to attend? They have agreed to do that. You're getting a copy of the flyer right now. They'd like to limit it to 30, but because they're coming out here and we're going to maybe do it once, they've capped it at 50. We recommend electeds think about whether or not this would be a good thing to send a couple people to. You're getting the flyer as we speak. So just wanted to put in a personal plug. I will be there to make up for my missing the first one.
Thank you, John. Mm-hmm. Anybody else? Okay, moving on to the consent calendar.
Move consent.
Second. They moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
Yeah,
one distinction,
please. Yes. Just for the record, is that an abstention related to the minutes specifically or the entire consent calendar?
Thank you. Moving on to discussion items. Number 8, final audit financial report. Gary.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good evening, members of the committee. Present to you a CVEX audited financial report, statement of audited SAS 114 letter and management letter for fiscal year 2011-2012. The audit was performed by the accounting firm of Mayor Hoffman McCann. Staff recommendation is that the executive committee receive and file the report. The technical advisory committee concurs with staff's recommendation. Ms. Jennifer Clark, shareholder with Mayor Hoffman McCann, will briefly go over the audit and will answer any questions that you may have regarding the audit financial reports and letters.
Good afternoon. I have a brief presentation for you to go over the results of the audited financial statements for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2012. There are certain communications that are required for the auditor to make to those in governance. One of those communications is the type of audit opinion, and we did issue an unqualified audit opinion on January 16th of 2013. We are required to communicate to you what our responsibilities are under the audit, and they are to plan and perform the audit to obtain reasonable but not absolute assurance that the financial statements are free of material misstatements. So all that really means is that we don't test every transaction, but we do look at material transactions in the financial statements. We're required to communicate any changes in the accounting standards. And this year, there were no changes that affect your organization. And we're also required to discuss with you anytime there are adjustments detected during the audit process. And this year, there were no material adjustments detected during the audit process. And we did have two adjustments that were not material that we did not report because they were not material. Each year, we look at internal controls for the purpose of designing our audit, but not for the purpose of expressing an opinion on internal controls. And during that process, we look at cash receipts, cash disbursements, payroll, and information systems. And we test transactions and look at the control processes to ensure that there are effective internal controls at your organization. So as a result of that, we did not have any material weaknesses or significant deficiencies in internal control as part of that review. And additionally, we did not note any instances of non-compliance that are required to be reported to you. Just to give you an idea of what some of the more significant procedures we did during this audit, we confirm 100% of the cash and investment balances. We confirm revenues and receivables and also long-term loans from member agencies and granting agencies. We tested the five largest transportation projects, and in doing that, we reviewed the agreements between the agencies. We looked at revenue recognition, expenditure recognition, and determined that the receivables and payables were correctly reported in the financial statement period. We also confirmed and tested changes in the revenue bonds payable and the Measure A advances from RCTC. And we pulled a sample of 40 random transactions, and what we're looking for in that is proper approvals, adherence to different grant requirements, and that the supporting documentation was correct. We obviously perform a lot of different procedures, but this is just to give you an idea of some of the things that we did during the audit. So overall, from your standpoint, I would call this a very boring audit. There is nothing exciting for me to share with you in terms of control weaknesses or findings. And so I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you have about the audit process or the financial statements.
Thank you. Any questions? I would like to thank the staff and Tom for an excellent audit. I guess it couldn't be any better, correct? So you guys did a good job. Thank you.
And I deserve very little thanks. It's really Gary who continued on with the tradition that started under John's leadership. Gary and the entire accounting team at CBAC done a fantastic job this year.
Gary is extremely boring.
That's what you want. Gary, would you like to have this? After, okay. Thank you. I guess moving on is response.
I don't think we take any action.
I thought just receive and file. We have to have a motion then?
You do.
Okay.
So move.
Then move and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Sorry for that. Trying to move on, see? We're moving on to response to the EPA proposed action related to the Congo ban for the Mission Indians. Roar.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Periodically, we have provided updates to this committee regarding the requests and the efforts by the Morongo Band of Mission Indians to the Environmental Protection Agency regarding the Federal Ozone Air Quality Attainment Standard. Recent updates to this committee were done in December 2010 and in January 2011. We now need to inform you that the EPA is accepting public comment through the Federal Register to actions it is proposing related to the tribe's request. Back in 2003, the EPA changed the boundaries of non-attainment areas throughout Southern California. That change included and affected the majority of 35,000 acres of the Morongo Tribal Reservation, moving the tribe from the Salton Sea Air Basin, where the Coachella Valley is located, into the South Coast Air Basin. The tribe claimed that over time, as a result of this boundary change, heavier regulatory burdens have made it difficult to do an economic development in their area. And at that time, they wanted to either have the boundaries reversed so that it would be returned to the Salton Sea Air Basin, or have its tribal air quality monitors used, which are not official monitor sites. Following presentation to this committee in January of 2011, our executive director sent a letter to the local Region 9 offices of the EPA expressing concern regarding the tribe's request to the EPA. CBAC also requested full involvement in the decision-making process. You have a copy of that January 2011 letter in your packet. Fast forward to January 2012. CBAC was informed by Supervisor Benoit's office of the January 2nd Federal Register. You have a copy in your packet, wherein the EPA is now proposing to redesignate the Morongo Reservation as a separate air quality planning area for the one-hour ozone and eight-hour ozone standards, essentially carving it out of both the Salton Sea Air Basin and the South Coast Air Basin. We would like to show you three slides just to give you kind of a geographic idea of what is involved. So here's here are the current air basins. And then here are the air basins, and you can see the Morongo Tribal Reservation area. And then this one shows a little bit more clearly the tribal reservation, 35,000 feet, versus you can see it's not one giant geographic land mass. It is like a checkerboard. But that is what they are looking to do, is to basically carve that area out. We understand that the tribe does have its own air quality programs, a weather station, and an air quality monitoring station. We are very concerned regarding the EPA's proposed action. Those concerns are outlined in a comment letter to the EPA that is in the staff report. We are concerned that there will be a lesser level of air pollution controls. Moreover, that CDAG or the AQMD have not been consulted by the EPA. Given the winds and the Coachella Valley geographic location, we could be the recipient of further pollutants to our area. And you, as cities and the county, have spent millions with the adoption of the Coachella Valley State Implementation Air Quality Plan to regain our federal PM10 standard. We also don't want EPA to reverse their decision and put the Morongo Reservation back into the Salton Sea Air Basin. We want it to stay in the South Coast Air Basin, where you've got tighter air pollution controls. The EPA is accepting public comments until February 1st. This item was placed as an urgent item at the Energy and Environmental Resources Committee, and the committee recommended a response to the EPA that's in your staff report and a meeting with the tribe. Tom, unless you have any further comment, what I'd like to do now is turn it over to Supervisor Benoit, who also wanted to comment on this. We also have Barbara Baer, District Counsel, with the AQMD present. The AQMD has responded as well with a letter, and Barbara will speak on the letter as well as next steps. We also have Dr. Emily Nelson, who is longtime consultant with CEVAC's Energy and Environmental Resources Committee, should you need a further explanation regarding our proposal. So with that, Supervisor Benoit.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the update. This proposal obviously puts me in a very difficult position because I've got good friends in the South Coast, good friends out here, and good friends in the tribe. The tribe has contacted me and asked me to help them with this. It's a tough call. I certainly am very sensitive to the concerns that have been raised. I want to hear it from the AQMD Council on it. What I am trying to do, and I've reached out to Chairman Martin. And I've asked him to, let's see if we can sit out and talk about this. At the very least, this is an opportunity to find some common ground. It's a huge gap to try and cover. Mr. Wallerstein from the South Coast has indicated a willingness, and so has Mr. Kirk, and we hope to have that meeting. But at this point, I'd like to ask our attorney from the South Coast is here to give us a South Coast perspective.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Supervisor Benoit. My name is Barbara Baird. I'm District Counsel with the South Coast Air Quality Management District and responsible for basically all legal matters except enforcement. We did file a comment letter with EPA on this proposal last Friday, and that's being distributed by Ms. Wilson right now. I think the main point that needs to be made here is one that we made in our letter, which is that, as Ms. Wilson mentioned, you asked the EPA in January 2011 not to go forward with this action until there had been a thorough analysis of the potential impacts on the Coachella Valley. And although this proposal would not move the reservation into the Salton Sea Air Basin, which would make the Morongo area the what we call design valley for the Coachella Valley and would delay ozone attainment in the valley, the proposal still is designed to allow the development of further industry on the reservation without the restraints that are found in either the South Coast Air Basin or the Coachella Valley because of district rules, or in the other areas of the Banning Pass, which remain in the South Coast Air Basin. So the purpose of the EPA's action appears to be to allow some further development, which has not yet been identified. So we believe that needs to be analyzed to assure there's no adverse impact on the Coachella Valley, either in terms of ozone or particulates. Ozone is basically made from two pollutants, nitrogen oxides and volatile organic compounds. Nitrogen oxides are a product of combustion, so any fuel-burning source would increase that. And nitrogen oxides are a major contributor to particulates. So we think that there needs to be analysis of both the impact on particulates as well as on ozone. Now, what the EPA has stated as its reason for this action, first they say they neglected to consult the tribe properly when they moved the boundary in the first place. That's fine. We think they need to consult the tribe as they're required to do. But secondly, their reasoning is that they're concerned that because of the location of the tribe, any kind of new development that would be a major source under the Clean Air Act would be required to get offsets from the sources in the South Coast Air Basin. For those of you who don't know what an offset is, it basically means under the Clean Air Act that a new major source or an expanded existing major source can't do that unless they obtain reductions from other sources. And since there are a few other sources in the Morongo area, those reductions would come from sources in Los Angeles, Orange County, other parts of the basin. And EPA said that they are concerned that state law limits the availability of offsets to the Morongo area because there is a limitation on the transfer of offsets between districts. And our position is, first of all, the state law doesn't prohibit that transfer. It just imposes certain requirements, consent by both governing bodies, and that the donating district be upwind, which in this case it would be. But also, we don't consider the Morongo area to be within another district under the meaning of the statute. So there would be access to offsets resources in the South Coast. Now, of course, they cost money, but that's the same as is faced by sources in the remainder of the South Coast Air Basin and in the Coachella Valley. So besides our concern that there hasn't been analysis of the effects on the valley, we're also concerned that this action could create an uneven playing field because both the South Coast and the Coachella Valley have these stronger controls, and new sources that are subject to the Clean Air Act require to get offsets in both those areas. And even the other parts of the Banning Pass, including every other square in the checkerboard part that you see, would still have to meet the South Coast standards. So it concerns us that it's creating an unfair situation for businesses in surrounding areas. We're not sure that EPA's reasoning is a proper reason under the Clean Air Act, as they appear to concede that under air quality considerations, keeping the Banning Pass in the South Coast Air Basin is appropriate. And normally, when an area is upwind, you classify it with the area that it's upwind and rather than the downwind area. Instead, it seems that EPA is focusing on economic issues, which may not be a proper basis. But we concur with your recommendation that the AQMG and CBAG try to meet with both EPA and the tribe and find out what is really behind all this and what needs to be done to come to an adequate resolution of this problem. If there's not a satisfactory resolution, the ultimate remedy would be, and Aurora asked me to address this, would be for legal action to be taken to challenge EPA's decision once it becomes final, and that would need to occur within 60 days of the publication in the Federal Register of the final decision. But in the meantime, we look forward to working with you here other concerned entities on this situation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have at this time.
Do you have any questions for Barbara?
Forgive my ignorance, but what is the urgency at this time that there needs to be any kind of a reclassification? Is there some type of pending development on Morongo's land that is...
We don't have the answer to that. That's part of the concern that we have, is we don't know why this action was taken now. Basically, the last we heard of it was April of 2011, when Mr. Kirk had some conversations with EPA. And ironically, Mr. Kirk represented that EPA promised to keep everybody better informed at that time.
And I would assume that the tribe has some sovereignty issues, because I believe they signed an agreement of some type.
Well, they are, yes, the Indian tribe is treated as a sovereign nation and are therefore not subject to AQMD permitting rules, but they are subject to EPA's permitting rule for tribal lands, and that's what appears to be driving the situation.
Yeah, I think we need to get together and have a lot more talking with the tribe on this. Maybe we need to sort of take it in front to the hostile tone of this whole thing so far. I think that we're just charging off. And, you know, we don't have some project that's about ready to happen. It's just going to blight this whole area. If anybody knows that, you know, what the heck they could do, and it's any different than what we have right here. Suddenly, we have nothing like this whole map, you know, down there. And, you know, the worst, the heaviest use they could do would be like a gas power plant, just like we had right over there in the throat of the pass now, that was mine and everything worked out great. So, I'd like to see more consultation. I think that in a hurry on this, looks like EPA doesn't have the jurisdiction, and we have the right to talk to them and tell them what we think as a group, you know, whether it's, you know, we all agree or some of us agree. But I think we need more consultation on this. I think that's going to have the quick, possible way this took off.
I think the reason that it's become urgent is that it went directly to the Federal Register, and now that puts time constraints on any responses and discussion that we may have, an opportunity for discussion. And that's the 60 days, right?
Well, the first deadline is actually this Friday, which is the comment deadline. And if an agency doesn't comment, then they're not able to challenge later in court, should that be the desired result.
This gentleman.
Okay, I understand now the time constraint issue, but that's important. I also wonder, you know, I think discussion is imperative. I mean, we need to sit down and figure this out. Given the time constraint, we need to move. Who would initiate the legal challenge if it were to go to a legal challenge? Is that CBAC, South Coast? Who would?
Either one or both, or whoever feels it's appropriate to do that.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
We're some steps away from that, and South Coast has a lot more expertise in this matter than CEDAC certainly does. We relied on South Coast for technical and legal expertise on this, and I suspect that that will continue.
Mr. Chair? Yes, go ahead.
Just a couple of questions. From the staff report, it seems like EPA proposing for Epinera in the previous rulemaking that reversed the boundaries. What happened? I mean, it sounds like in 2004 they were part of our air district, and then they're not part of our air district.
Well, the Banning Pass area was part of the Salton Sea Air Basin until EPA took this action. Which was at the request of the state to move the Banning Pass area into the South Coast Air Basin, reason being that the South Coast Air Basin has higher levels of ozone than here in the Coachella Valley, and the Banning Pass more more closely resembled the air quality in the South Coast area than it did the area of the Coachella Valley. The error that EPA refers to is that they failed to consult appropriately with the tribe when they moved the entire Banning Pass area into the South Coast. So they feel that they need to correct that error, and we're not objecting to that. Our concern is that by taking the reservation out of the South Coast Air Basin and therefore changing the definition of a major source, they're making it easier for major sources in the Morongo area to be constructed without analyzing any impacts on the development area here in the valley.
What has, I guess, the South Coast air qualities just governing standard when it comes to pollution air credits? Are they being used within the Coachella Valley? It seems like whatever Morongo does, the impact's going to come downstream. But what you're proposing is that those dollars be spent upstream, I guess, from what I've heard.
Well, it's not us that's making the proposal. It's EPA that's saying that because there are no immediately large nearby sources to the Morongo Reservation, when they buy offsets, they would have to buy it from a source in the South Coast. And that's the same, essentially, for other sources that are currently in South Coast Air Basin.
And Barbara, if I may, in clarification, because we have a recent example of this sort of situation with the Sentinel Power Plant. The Sentinel Power Plant, pursuant to legislation, district, air district rules, etc., did have to buy offsets. Those offsets were actually generated in the South Coast Air Basin west of us. But the money, the revenue, of course, is being spent in the Coachella Valley for mitigation. If this proposal were to proceed, we lose that opportunity, in my opinion, to have, if a new source was sited in Morongo, new air basin, we lose the opportunity to generate funds that can be used to mitigate the air quality problem in Coachella Valley. Is that fair, Mark?
Well, as you know, the Sentinel situation was based upon a particular state law, which made the access to the district's internal accounts available. And for that reason, the money was spent by the our governing board at the supervisor's request here in the valley. Under this situation, it's not been determined whether the offsets would be from a private source, in which case the money would go to the offset holder, or where the offsets would come from. All we're saying is that there's no prohibition in state law, like EPA thinks there is, on having offsets from the South Coast used in the Toronto area.
Yeah.
You know, I certainly, again, feel very conflicted in the sense that we have good friends in the tribe, and I reiterate that I am working, I'm hearing with the chairman to try and set up a meeting to talk about this and see if there's a way to bridge these concerns amicably and present maybe a more regional response to EPA that we include the South Coast, CBAG, and the tribe. I don't know that that can be done, but it's certainly worthy of a discussion. And Mr. Walsh is absolutely willing to come down South Coast would like to be involved in that kind of discussion. But it is of interest to me that 14 months ago, Morongo's representatives came to my office upstairs here, and we had a very amicable discussion about all of these issues and promised that we would be involved as it moved forward and kept in the loop and so forth. And we didn't hear a thing until this item was published in the Federal Registry's proposed rule change. So, it is, in my estimation, interesting that that went that way. I believe that they've obviously got an interest in it, that it's not being done just prospectively. I think that they've got plans, and they're worried that if to get those plans done, they have to have this exemption to change that quality rule. So I'm not sure that the sitting down is going to change any of that. I mean, I'm pretty sure it won't, but I want to make sure that we have a chance to try and resolve this thing by sitting around the table talking about it.
Thank you, John. Mom?
Yeah, it appears to me that the EPA has to be at the table, because they're the ones that, from what I'm hearing, is that they don't quite understand the difference between the basins and what this effect is having and how it affects the state. Or anyway, it's the EPA doesn't seem to quite have the full picture. So they need to be in the discussion, in my opinion, because the AQMD and the tribes can all, and CBEC can agree, and if EPA wants to go off on their merry way and do whatever they want, they can. Am I right or wrong?
Well, we definitely think EPA should be included in the conversation. They're the ones who's making the decision here.
They're the one that's going to ultimately make the decision, is the EPA.
We'll certainly extend the invitation.
Mr. Chairman, does this set the precedent for other tribes to carve out their own air quality districts also?
When it was brought to my attention that this action was pending, and actually turns out that EPA has already moved the Mojave Reservation into its own separate air basin for purposes of the 2008 ozone standard, which won't be attained for a long time from now. We weren't aware of that, and when I went back and looked at it, turns out they've also already redesignated Pechanga down near San Diego in the Temecula area for purposes of that standard, and Pechanga has recently filed a request to be treated as a state under the Clean Air Act. So we're concerned that it could be presidential.
So could we tell them that in those square miles, the ozones can't leave those square miles to get
that? That's the whole issue with air basins, is that they don't stay in jurisdictions.
Yes, go ahead.
For me, it seems like, at least from the tribe's perspective, and I'm not speaking on behalf of them, looking at this, it's an issue of self-reliance, tribal sovereignty, and then legal control of their own air quality. I guess destiny to mitigate that. But here in the Coachella Valley, do we have an example of your AQMD working with other tribes? I mean, can we work with them? Because that's really what I want to do, at least me, I want to accomplish that.
Well, Dr. Nelson knows more about this than I do because she was involved with this before my time, but the HOMAC Research Recovery Center actually, in the memorandum of agreement with the AQMD, County of Riverside, and EPA and the tribe, actually agreed to be subject to South Coast AQMD permitting rules and requirements, and even though they weren't required to because they're located on tribal land. So there is precedent, and we think that that could serve as a valuable precedent in the future. And so there certainly is that possibility.
Can we ask Emily, Chair, so your concerns, to describe how that agreement was reached and what prompted that agreement?
Well, I was new to the Valley. I'm native, but I returned from the LA area, actually, having worked with the district for 7 years. It really was just a good neighbor meeting, and series of meetings. EPA was somewhat involved, but the limitations are there. If it's federal land or sovereign land, South Coast Air Quality Management District, CBEC, really have no jurisdiction. So, but to be good neighbors, the tribe said, well, we want to put in this HOMAC facility, so what can we do to be good neighbors? And in the end, like she said, under a memorandum of understanding, there were several agreements. One was that they would put on all of the control technology that would have been required by the South Coast District, which was far above anything that EPA could have required. EPA standards are the same throughout the country. So we would have been along with Louisiana standards, basically, if all they did was meet the EPA standards. Number two, instead of having Region 9 EPA people coming down from San Francisco to do, you know, surprise inspections, which of course wouldn't have happened, they allow for the South Coast District's inspectors to make those inspections because they're already in the area looking at other facilities. So it ended up being, in my mind, a win-win, and I don't see why we can't go ahead and do that with any other tribal. But clearly, what I want you to understand, we truly usually talk about PM10 when we're talking about air quality, because that's our only homegrown pollutant. It comes from our crustal material, it comes from all of the man-made activities that we do here in the desert, and so we're responsible for, and we have spent tens of millions of dollars to make ourselves entertainment over the last couple decades. Ozone, on the other hand, is not directly emitted. And so if a new facility went in on the Indian tribe, they would not have an ozone impact to themselves. What would be emitted would be nitrogen oxides and volatile organic compounds. Both of those are gases. They would stay in the air, and they would react in the presence of sunlight and form ozone, as well as nitrates, which are very tiny particles, smaller than PM10, but 2.5. Right now, we meet the federal standard for 2.5, but if we add in a few more peaker plants and other kinds of industries into our area, we're going to change the chemistry of our little basin here, and we'll end up with more 2.5, and we'll end up with a lot more ozone. Currently, the ozone we experience is transported to us from the people that start their cars up from rush hour traffic in Santa Monica. It travels. L.A. has their peak ozone concentrations kind of midday. Riverside, it's sort of mid-afternoon. It doesn't make it to us until late evening, so our exposure is actually quite low. We're usually inside at that point. Certainly children aren't running around a schoolyard breathing in high concentrations of ozone as they are up in Los Angeles. So ozone, we've really not worried about in terms of health effects for us, even though we do exceed the standards. It breaks down overnight. It's a very reactive compound. It's 3 oxygen molecules. So as soon as it touches anything, it oxidizes that material. It's a gas, so when you breathe it in deeply, it actually oxidizes your lung tissue. It breaks open individual cells. So if you are exercising in high ozone, it burns when you take a deep breath. You regrow those cells, but over time, a long-term exposure, you're going to get aged lung tissue. You're going to have reduced lung function. So the children that are growing up in L.A., the studies have proven that they have much reduced lung function compared to an average child not in that air pollution. So it is a criteria air pollutant. The federal government does care about it. There is precedent for working with the tribes as neighbors. This tribe has been very generous to many of our organizations throughout the valley. I think that it's a shame that we're dealing with this from the Federal Register instead of from a conversation, which I know Tom was trying to establish over a year ago, 2 years ago. So anyway, I'm sorry I've spoken too much, but I just wanted to sort of paint the picture. I've been involved in our air quality here for 25 years, so there is precedence.
Jan?
Well, that was really depressing. Are you sure the ozone isn't coming from all those cars at the outlets starting up?
Certainly, you know, we contribute from our vehicles, absolutely. But we just don't have, you know, big refineries, big power plants.
Okay, so we've established we have to comment by Friday. And I would assume those comments are prepared or in preparation, just to preserve our right.
They're in your staff.
That's in the staff.
Okay. So then they have to respond to us. So
they're not required
to respond. In the Federal Register, they're required.
Exactly. So what we need to do then is, in the meantime, just prepare something with the EPA and with anybody we can get to sit down and discuss with us. So I would move to support the staff's recommendation.
John, I think, unless I'm mistaken, we're dealing with a fact-finding type of situation. We want to know the information up front about what's happening. It's just preparing us for whatever future decisions. We're not making any hard decisions now of going after them or not, or supporting or not. Just getting the information, and I think that's what we're dealing with right now. And I think it's important that we know what the plans are. And communication is the best way to do that.
I think John was going in that direction in his previous conversation.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We reached out immediately after seeing the Federal Registry. The tribe leadership was going to be out of town. They were at the inaugural for a week. They were unavailable. We had communications today that we will have a conversation about a date to have a meeting very soon. I would just point out that we brought Mr. David Roosevelt from the Cabazon folks in, and we talked about MACA and South Coast. We worked very closely with the Cabazon tribe in that regard. They worked very closely with the Torres Martinez, and that's in fact one of the recent stations they just added for monitoring the salt seas on the Torres Martinez tribal grounds. There's every reason to believe we could have a very, you know, civil and hopefully productive dialogue. I think they fully expect that we will respond to the Federal Registry, but that's not going to change the fact that we can have that dialogue.
Sure.
No,
that's important.
Okay, so
second.
We have a motion. Do we need a second?
Second. Okay, we have a motion for Dan. We have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No. I'm going to abstain because I'm hopefully able to play.
Abstention.
You have all that?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you. John, you guys still want to stay in contact?
Yeah, we will. Mr. Kirk, it's up to you, the chair. I'm going to involve some of
John. My name is with it.
It's really the pleasure of the committee. And the chair, if you'd like to involve more in the discussion.
Can we go back in the E&E?
That's another option. So we could refer this back to the Energy and Environment Committee and perhaps based on when we set up a meeting, et cetera.
What do you think? I mean, you want to have this staff?
I think we ought to stick with the supervisor's office taking the lead in establishing the meeting and then see what that develops.
But at least we're on notice with EPA as far as the Federal Register in a timely manner.
That's right.
Thank you. Okay, moving on, including the City of Palm Desert and the Desert City Energy Partnership. Katie?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll be brief. We're delighted that the City of Palm Desert, after their very successful 5-year partnership with Southern California Edison and Gas Company, during which time the Set to Save program and AB 811 were hit to pass, are interested in joining the Desert Cities Partnership. Based on what you heard from staff, the council will consider the resolution in your staff report sometime in February. And I just want to note just very briefly, I think essentially the staff recommendation is before you. We think we have a lot to learn. Obviously, the city has had some great experience with their partnership that they've worked on and innovative efforts throughout their community. In the coming weeks, we are going to be meeting with city staff from all of your jurisdictions through the partnership, looking at potential projects. One of the things we're really looking at is potential funding opportunities for the municipalities. One of those is an on-bill financing program that utilities are offering. Several cities are considering that. It's an interest-free loan that could allow you to install energy efficiency measures. So we're greatly pleased with the success of the partnership, and we look forward to Palm Desert joining us. With that, the staff recommendation before you, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Any questions?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to item D, contract extension for Green for Life program. Jacob.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to once again, another brief update. Draft final energy action plans and climate action plans are now being sent to the cities that are served by Southern California Edison. This month, we began developing our Green Building Act, which you approved quite a few months ago. And with that, you have staff's recommendation. I do want to note that the Energy and Environment Committee requested that we cut the time frame for the contracts in half to June 30th. So we went ahead and done that. With that, the augmentation also was cut in half in terms of the amount of funding. So with that, if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Any questions?
Second.
And moving second, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to item number E.
And rather than have Alan give this, I'm going to give it a shot. And as the city managers know, I tried to do this at the city managers meeting, and Alan tried to do it at the transportation committee. It's a complicated issue, but I'll do my best. And that is back as a part of the 2005 TPPS, our Bible of Transportation Improvements. We had a priority list of improvements, and in 2007, you, the CVAC Executive Committee, approved a policy of allowing lower priority projects to enter into reimbursement agreements with CVAC. So if a jurisdiction, let's say a Palm Desert or Coachella or anybody else, wanted to advance a lower priority project, they can enter into a reimbursement agreement with CVAG to ultimately get reimbursed for funding a project up front. And it makes good sense from a public policy standpoint. If somebody wants to fast track a project and put money up front, at the time, redevelopment money or other funds, they could do so. The traveling public enjoys the facility, and CVAG reimburses the CVAG share at some point in the future. Well, that policy only worked during the 2005 report period, which was 2005 to 2010. And in about 2010, we started looking at our cash flow challenges, and we stopped doing these reimbursement agreements for those two reasons. We had a new 2010 transportation Bible, and we were taking a hard look at our cash flow. We have a likely request coming in from the city of Rancho Mirage asking me if we could consider again a reimbursement policy for a couple of relatively small projects that are not at the top part of the priority list. They're not at the bottom, but they're kind of in the top third, top 35% or so. What we've proposed is that we restart the reimbursement program to encourage jurisdictions, in this case Rancho Mirage, to move forward with the certainty that they'll get reimbursed in the future. The question is when. And in 2005, when we did this, the world was a very different place. And so we entered into reimbursement agreements that suggested, well, you'll get reimbursed in 2 or 3 years, or 4 years, or 5 years. There's a lot more money coming in, and the economy, of course, is more robust. The world's changed, and it's still uncertain. So what we're trying to do in this policy is say, all right, Rancho Mirage, your project is ranked here. Let's call it you have 10 points in the system. There are a bunch of projects with 10 points. We'll try. You finish your project, and when you finish your project, you fall out of our Bible. You're no longer a part of the TPPS. But we'll keep tracking all the projects that are still there, and once they rise up to the top 10%, we'll pay you back. It's a bit uncertain, and if you're Rancho Mirage or anybody else, you have to deal with that uncertainty. But CVAG's been a pretty good partner for 30 years, and we always pay our bills. So you'll eventually get paid back. It's just a bit uncertain about when. And that would be updated every 5 years. That's the essence of the policy. If this were to be approved, and it was approved by the TAC and the Transportation Committee, it's likely you'd see something in the very near future from Rancho Mirage or perhaps others with specific projects that gave you a specific example of how this works. Any questions?
So are there parameters in terms of where a given project that might want to be reimbursed would fall on that list? Because my concern would be if that falls too far down on the list, then you could potentially end up in another cash flow issue.
In my opinion, is that this is actually a positive thing for cash flow, which is, again, maybe hard to understand at first glance. If Rancho Mirage, for example, was far down the list and they wanted to fast-track a project today, we will say to Rancho Mirage, yeah, we'll pay you back. You spend $2,013, we pay you back with $2,025, which makes it actually a little easier on CVAG's cash flow because, of course, money gets more expensive over time, if that makes sense. So it shouldn't matter how far down the project is from CVAC's perspective. It will from the jurisdiction. If you're far down the list, you may not get paid back for 25 years. If you're closer to the top, you might get paid back in 5 or 10 years.
So you're going to wait until that project floats up.
Exactly. That's the essence of it.
What you're saying, Tom, eventually you will get paid, but the time is, you don't know.
You'll get paid eventually.
This question, and again, this does not affect any jurisdiction that would have gotten a
project that's already up on the list anyway. I'm just confirming
that. Yes, and that's an obvious question, and that is those that have been waiting a long time for their projects. You know, a Jefferson Interchange, number one on our priority list. Does that affect a cash flow in Jefferson? Absolutely not. We're going to fund, continue to fund the top-ranked projects first and then move down the list.
John? I followed everything very well except the last piece, where if you take it off the TPTS, how then will it, I mean, in your example, it was a 10. How then, because every 5 years it's reshuffled, the 10s are now 13s and or 8s. How does that 110 float up without it being on the TPPS?
There's always a danger with having a former executive director.
Well, revenues were good when I was there.
And somebody could say the same about Palm Desert. You know?
I still blame it on redevelopment.
John's raised one of the complications, but you know, with computers, it makes it a whole lot easier. Let's say there are 10 projects that are currently ranked a 10 point. Some of them will become 14 points in the future, some will become 8. Tracking those segments over time isn't that complicated. It's a math exercise. So we'll keep track of the average points for those 10 projects. And as that average inches up, that would trigger repayment.
So you take all the 10s and you average under the new TPPS, whether they are now, and if they're on the top 10%, those average, then it would qualify.
Exactly. And again, as we build projects, for example, I believe we have Date Palm in our TPPS now. Once it's done, not too long from now, it falls out of the TPPS and projects move up. Have I confused everybody enough? This is a way to say yes to a jurisdiction that wants to fast track a project.
I don't wonder if you really like it.
Go ahead.
Tom, you know, my city, we have a lot of infrastructure projects coming, you know, forward, and some of them are going to be in 2025 or 2030. Will there be enough money left that you know, in those years, or are we just going to be reimbursing people or reimbursing projects at 2025, 2030? I mean, my question is regarding the cash flow as it projects out, and we probably won't know because of the economy, but I certainly wouldn't want my project not to happen because we're reimbursing projects that we're building, you know, 2013 or 2012.
It's a fair question, Councilman. The our current system is designed to fully fund every project on that list. We have 250 projects that are about in our Bible. We do plan on funding all of them with a mix of Measure A revenue, TUMF revenue, federal and state revenue, and that's the game plan over the next 30 years. So, you know, I can't guarantee that we're going to run out of money, but thus far we've been moving along progressively. The good news about this is if there's any risk, I think the risk is on the jurisdiction that wants to move forward with the project. And in this case, if a jurisdiction, let's say a Rancho Mirage or anybody else wants to move forward, we all benefit, whether you're in Coachella or Palm Springs, from that jurisdiction paving a street and expanding the roadway network, because we generally all use multiple streets in the Coachella Valley. So I think this is good public policy to advance as many projects as possible, particularly while the bid environment is still reasonably good, although it's getting a little tighter, and we want to put people to work.
Yes, go ahead.
Tom, you did an excellent job, and I move staff's recommendation.
I'll second staff's recommendation. Hope that this policy stays in place and we don't change it every 5 years.
I apologize. It's a good point. One of the things that I noted, and I caught it, I apologize for catching it the last minute, in the policy on page 64, paragraph 5, Mayor DeRosa, you saved me here from having to explain this again in 2 years.
I'm sorry, Tom. I need to explain this. I'm sorry.
On paragraph 5, it suggested that this policy is only applicable for a couple of years. We'll be updating the TPPS in a couple of years. There's no reason, in my opinion, to do so. If the policy is not working for some reason, this or cash flow is not working for some reason, this could be reconsidered any day, in 1 year, in 5 years, or in 20 years. But I'd recommend, as a part of the motion in second, if they agree, that paragraph 5 be removed so that the policy continues on past the updates.
I agree.
Thank you again.
The first and second, then it begins on.
Okay. Mr. Chair, just, I mean, if this is the direction that we're going in, I mean, for me, again, it seems like, you know, the cities that are going to benefit the most from this are the ones that can advance that money. So to have reserves, and significant reserves, and those that don't, then we're just going to kind of wait in line and figure out when, you know, those Measure A monies or tough monies will become available. But, I mean, I want to make sure that we study this, you know, year after year, or whenever we do the TTPS, because, you know, there's a question of a little bit of equity. I mean, there are, you know, communities that have bigger reserves and can push it forward. So I'm worried about my city.
As a part of the next, this will not affect anybody, certainly in the next couple of years. There's no chance that the projects in question would be reimbursed within the next 2 years. What we can do at staff is explain this as a part of the update of the next TPPS and impact studies to address your questions and concerns.
As a city who has challenges with budgets, this is a benefit for us. It takes this project out of the system and yet advertises it in the long term, which allows for better cash flow for projects I have and I want to see done in my city eventually.
Yes, and the supervisor brings up a good point. Each one of these actions will come before the executive committee. This allows the policy to be approved and then to be project by project basis. If there was a $100 million project out there that took lots of cash flow and reimbursed in the next 5 years, I think you'd want to consider that. $1 million that might be paid back in 10 years is frankly peanuts in the bigger scheme of a $2 billion transportation program at CDOT.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Moving on to item F, transportation uniform mitigation fee.
Good evening. The transportation uniform mitigation fee and Measure A are the basic foundation of the funding for CBAG transportation program. The TUMF is a transportation fee that is based on number of trips generated by land use, and Measure A is the half-cent sales tax that you're pretty familiar with. These were meant to actually be about half and half of the funding. As you can see, this year we've got over $15 million from Measure A, the sales tax, and just over $1 million from TUMF, which just shows what you already, I'm sure, know how low development is these days. Overall, though, CBAG did get almost $18 million between the TUMF, the in-lieu from La Quinta, which is their sales tax, which is forfeited because they do not collect TUMF, and Measure A. You need to make findings that this meets my report online does meet the requirements of the Mitigation Fee Act. It has been reviewed by CDAG Counsel Tony Agabot, and she has found that it met all the requirements of the Mitigation Fee Act. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to.
Any questions?
Move approval, staff recommendation.
Second. Move and second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you.
Moving on to announcements. I guess TAC meeting will be Monday, February 11th at 11 o'clock. And the next meeting here will be Monday, February 25th at 4:30. And I'd like to thank everybody for coming and our new members again. And lots of luck and continue to do their best.